The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 12:11 a.m., November 28th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show!
Resist!
Hi, this is Kelly with K Voice of Resistance.
Resist!
I'm your host, Kelly. Welcome back from your days of giving thanks and fending off red-capped family members. I had a very nice Thanksgiving. It was good and necessary to unplug. But the political tides didn't stop coming while we were Thanksgiving-ing, so let's get to it. This Week in Congress. Brought to you by Countable, your number one source for all your political needs. The Senate entered the week with 15 legislative days remaining for 2017, while the House has 12 scheduled. Republican members of Congress want to complete their Scrooge-inspired work on tax reform before the end of the year, so that the 2018 tax year begins with tax hikes for the middle class already in place. Woo! The Senate is expected to bring its tax reform bill to the House floor. And if it passes, it will then go to conference committee to merge the Senate legislation with the House passed
H.R. 1. Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Once the conference committee produces a compromise bill, both chambers will need to pass it before it lands with a slash on Donald's spray tan stained desk. They also have to fund the government. In September, remember, Congress passed a stopgap funding bill to fund the government open through December 8, 2017, along with $15.2 billion in disaster relief funding, thus avoiding a partial government shutdown. Now faced with a new deadline, lawmakers will hope to once again keep the government funded. Now, they're not starting from scratch. The House passed a $1.23 trillion omnibus spending bill in September that included all of the usual 12 appropriations bills for fiscal year 2018. Well, it screwed over millions of people, underfunded necessary programs, and drowned the military in more money than sanity warrants.
Show me the money!
But the Senate hasn't taken action on the House-passed bill yet, so they're starting from the beginning. And the next few items on the list could complicate the debate. For one, and importantly, CHIP. The Children's Health Insurance Program, which they asininely allowed to expire in the end of September. The House has already done some work on the issue, passing the Championing Healthy Kids Act in early November. It remains to be seen whether the Senate passes its own bill, setting up a likely conference committee, or goes along with the House legislation. They also have to pass DACA. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. When Donald ended DACA, he did so with a six-month delay to give Congress until March to find a solution to help Dreamers. Rightfully so, the Democrats threatened a shutdown to the government by withholding their support for the omnibus appropriations bill, and hopefully will do so again. And then there is the good old Republican-imposed debt limit. Kind of. September's stopgap funding bill also raises the U.S. debt limit through December 8th, allowing the government to continue borrowing money to fund its operations. That will provide an interesting backdrop in the debates around government spending and tax cuts, as deficit hawks look to use the national debt for leverage. I say kind of, because the Treasury Department has what are known as extraordinary measures, essentially accounting maneuvers using for government accounts, provide anywhere from 3 to 5 months of flexibility. That means that the real debt limit debate will likely be put on ice until spring. Also on the docket is Iran sanctions. On October 13th, Donald decertified the Iran nuclear agreement, like the idiot he is, over, quote, violations of the spirit of the deal, unquote, and destabilizing activities. The move fell short of abandoning the deal outright, and it started a 60-day clock which Congress can act on the matter. According to Countable, lawmakers will have three courses of action available to them. One, they could reimpose the sanctions on Iran that were lifted by the nuclear deal, which would effectively kill the agreement in the eyes of Iran's regime. 2. They can make changes to the law by adding provisions that would trigger the reimposition of sanctions if certain lines are crossed, like if Iran reaches a nuclear breakout period. Or 3. They could do nothing and allow the terms of the nuclear agreement to stand as they are. Now the House begins its work on Tuesday, because, you know, they needed an extra day off so badly. It will consider a bill to remove offensive racial terms from certain federal regulations, along with 5 other uncontroversial bills under the fast-track process known as suspension of the rules. Wednesday will bring votes to require all members and employees in the House of Representatives to undergo workplace harassment training, and a bill that will pass related to doling out environment-killing mining rights in the National Forest located in Minnesota. Thursday's agenda will feature bills related to reauthorize the EPA's Brownfields Program, which redevelops abandoned and underutilized industrial facilities, and a bill modifying probationary period for federal civil service employees. The week concludes Friday with a vote on a bill to revise the CFPB rules related to financing for manufactured housing. All right, moving on. The 2018 elections will be on us before we know it. Voters in Illinois and Texas will be voting in primaries just over 3 months from now. 3 months. Russian hacking of the 2016 presidential election is widely verified by U.S. intelligence agencies, and most lawmakers agree that it happened. And yet, nothing has been done by our government to stop our democracy and our country from being hijacked again. At this point in the 2016 election cycle, Russian operatives had already been hacked into the DNC for 3 months already. Think about that. Currently, there are bipartisan efforts in Congress to address the issue, but efforts are stymied as lawmakers focus on frickin' tax reform and other issues. In the Senate, Amy Klobuchar and Lindsey Graham co-sponsored legislation called the Hack Act, which would allow states to apply for federal grants to update election technology after proving they had adopted certain federal cybersecurity standards. The legislation hasn't received a floor vote, and a companion House bill, the Paper Act, is similarly stuck in limbo. This, while a new Associated Press report reveals that dozens of current and former U.S. officials weren't told by the FBI that they were targeted by Russian hackers who were attempting to gain access to their Gmail accounts. The feds declined to inform the officials despite the fact that the FBI had evidence for at least a year that the Kremlin was targeting specific officials. The AP writes, quote, "Nearly 80 interviews with Americans targeted by Fancy Bear, a Russian government-aligned cyber espionage group, turned up only 2 cases in which the FBI provided a heads-up. Even senior policymakers discovered that they were targets only when the AP told them, a situation some described as bizarre and dispiriting." Unquote. The AP also did an analysis of data obtained by cybersecurity firm SecureWorks that indicated that of 312 American military and government officials that were emailed dangerous links by Fancy Bear, 131 clicked on them. Thus, around 40% of those officials came close to handing over their passwords. It wasn't clear how many of them actually gave up info to the hackers. So who feels like we're prepared here? Anyone? Anyone?
The Black Friday sale is now on.
Black Friday. Can you afford to miss the biggest ever huge Black Friday sale week?
How was your Black Friday? On Black Friday, background checks for guns hit a record high. Oh, woohoo! Fun fact, the 2 previous records were set on Black Friday as well. Assault weapons are popular among homosexuals. I'm sorry. Gun nuts? No, wait. That's not it. Paranoid, limp-dicked, or, well, not to be sexist, sexually dissatisfied gun clingers? Okay, fine. Gun enthusiast. And some ham-fingered homosexuals sued Maryland's governor and other officials in 2013 over Maryland's assault weapons ban. And since the courts are still reasonable instruments of democracy, they won't be for long, but for now at least, they're good. The 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia, ruled against the single-brain-celled challengers upholding Maryland's ban in February. The Fourth Circuit ruling was 10-4 and said that it had no power to extend constitutional protections to, quote, weapons of war, unquote. Which, of course, assault weapons are. But they're for protection!
I must protect my flock.
As Jim Jeffries says, I've never heard of these protection rifles you speak of. Maryland's ban outlaws assault long guns, mostly semi-automatic rifles such as the AR-15 and AK-47, as well as large-capacity magazines, which prevent the need for frequent loading. You know, for protection. Backed by the terrorist organization, the NRA Gun Lobby, plaintiffs said in a court filing that semi-automatic rifles are in common use and that a law-abiding citizen should not be deprived of them. I don't know. If they have an accent, they probably don't, but I'm just going to use it here because it fits. The good news here is the Supreme Court is refusing to hear the case, which means that the ruling stands, and these sad gun nuts who were not hugged enough as children will forever be forced to suffer in perpetuity without an AR-15 under their Christmas tree. They noted the disproportionate use of semi-automatic assault rifles in mass shootings and said that these weapons are like the military's M16 machine guns, which the Supreme Court, in its 2008 ruling, agreed may be banned. There is also little evidence that such guns are well-suited for self-defense. True story. According to Reuters, the Supreme Court issued important rulings in gun cases in 2008 and 2010, but has not taken up a major firearms case since. It has repeatedly refused to second-guess lower court's decisions upholding state and local restrictions on assault weapons, which filled a necessary void after the federal ban on these arms expired in 2004. In a landmark 2008 ruling, the Supreme Court, for the first time, found that the Second Amendment protected an individual's right to gun ownership under federal law, specifically to keep a handgun at home for self-defense. In 2010, the court found that the right extended to state and local laws as well. Yay. Since then, gun rights advocates have been probing how far those rights extend, including the types of guns and where they can be carried. Give them a minch and they'll take a machine gun and gun down a crowd of innocent bystanders. Also, the Supreme Court on Monday also declined to hear a second gun-related case in which a sad Florida man convicted of openly carrying a firearm on the streets sought to challenge that state's ban on such activity. Which, by the way, it blows my mind that Florida is not an open carry state.
You just blew my fucking mind.
Defendant Dale Lee Norman, who had a permit to carry a concealed weapon, was convicted of openly carrying a handgun in 2012 near his home in Fort Prince, Florida. In March of this year, the Florida Supreme Court rejected Norman's challenge to the so-called open carry ban, saying it did not violate his right to bear arms.
Na-na-na-boo-boo, stick your head in doo-doo.
So, that ruling will be upheld as well.
Bye-bye!
Every day, you'll discover something to savor.
Delicious. What's for dinner?
The New York Times. It adds life to your life.
If you listen to this show, you know I have a tumultuous relationship with the New York Times. They are important and often do great work that is necessary to our very democracy, and yet they seem to have this irresponsible streak that is way, way, way beneath the status they have achieved. Be it weapons of mass destruction, obsession with the emails, or this. Over the weekend, they ran a puff piece by Richard Fawcett called A Voice of Hate in America's Heartland. It is a fluffy piece glorifying and normalizing your everyday white supremacist. Nazis are just like everybody else, y'all. Quote, Huberites, Ohio. Tony and Maria Hovatar were married this fall. They registered at Target. On their list was a muffin pan, a four-drawer dresser, and a pineapple slicer. Miss Hovatar, 25, was worried about Antifa bashing up the ceremony. Weddings are hard enough to plan for when your fiancé is not an avowed white nationalist. Unquote. Come on, guys. What are you doing? To quote Salon, quote, when writing stories about Nazis, there are a few questions that are worth asking. For example, what is it that makes someone want to follow an ideology that led to the death of millions of people in Europe? Why is there hate? Does the subject realize that by following an arbitrary list of physical and genetic characteristics one can easily possess, one could easily cause them to become the pariah in genocidal and fascistic mindset? Should Americans punch them? The piece shouldn't, on the other hand, be spending more in time on how Nazis are just like us when you think about it. Unquote. This is how the Times Nazi saluting piece ends. Quote, the pasta was ready. Ms. Hovator talked about how frightening it was this summer to watch from home as the Charlottesville rally spun out of control. Mr. Hovator said he was glad the movement had grown. They spoke about their future, about moving into a bigger place, and about their honeymoon. About having kids. Unquote. Aww, cute! Little Nazis! Yay! Oh, I can hear the pitter-paddle of little goose steps now.
Come on, New York Times! This is irresponsible even for your standards.
Do better. Do better. There are much more important and valuable things to cover. Instead of giving a voice to hate, try writing a profile of a Puerto Rican surviving without power and clean water or a roof over their head right now. Speaking of, why isn't the media reporting on Puerto Rico? Daily Kos feels that it is because Donald is not tweeting about it. Quote, this is what it means to live in the Trump era. 3.4 million Americans suffering through an unprecedented disaster for over 2 months can't get media attention unless Trump is calling them financially irresponsible or engaging in a Twitter feud with a woman of color. Unquote. Supposedly, an examination of over 80 print and online media coverage across the United States shows that more than 1,100 news outlets carried stories about Hurricanes Harvey and Irma, while only 500 carried stories on Maria. Overall, Hurricane Maria received three times as few mentions in text than Hurricane Harvey and Irma. Months after Maria in Puerto Rico is struggling. Drinking water, even for those few who can access it from the tap, is highly suspect in regards to safety and cleanliness. They're dealing with many of the same infrastructure problems we are on the mainland, and the pipes were questionable before the hurricane. I checked in with a woman I know who lives in Puerto Rico, and this is what she wrote to me. Quote, day 65 without power, tired and losing hope more and more, unquote. I told her how sorry I was and Trump screwed him over. I asked if she was going to stay and she said, quote, I don't have many options, I'm broke. It's very costly living without power and all I got from FEMA was a small bottle of water and a thanks for coming. I swear to you, I don't wish this on anyone. It's truly heartbreaking to live like this. If they listen to Trump, it's fantastic here. It's not. And very kind people have sent me things that I actually asked for when they asked. Adult diapers, Pampers, personal hygiene products, and such, which I've distributed to the mountain region where it's truly ungodly. FEMA promised tarps. They're 125,000 short. Elderly people with no roof over their head. Neighbors help, but it's the blind leading the blind. Imagine 80 plus years old and left with nothing of what little you had. Yet it is reality. I'm not being melodramatic, trust me. I have a neighbor who is Red Crossed for years, an American guy, and he cried when telling me they spent 3 days digging four kids out of a mudslide. They don't say it in the news. Another man called 911 when his mother died. After 4 days of no response, he buried her in the yard. Unquote. These are stories we're not hearing while the Times holds up Nazi forgotten Americans like heroes. These are the suffering Americans we have left to rot. There are helpers, though, doing their thing, trying to help. Resilient Power Puerto Rico is a group working to help set up free solar power hubs on the island. The group wants to install solar hubs in 100 towns in 100 days, and it has many sponsors and collaborators. The ambitions for solar power are sky high in Puerto Rico right now. Even before the devastation, electricity cost customers 3 times as much as Florida because the cost of transporting oil. And the system of above-ground power lines proved vulnerable to high winds and rain. According to WNYC, despite having sun year-round, only 2% of the island's electricity came from renewable sources last year. They hope that 2 years from now, Puerto Rico can be 100% renewable. There is a fear that solar will be part of Puerto Rico's future only for the rich. Installers currently have waiting lists for private clients who will pay around $25,000 to equip their homes with solar power panels. But that's not how most people there live. Puerto Rico has a 45% poverty rate. Arturo Mesaldea, the associate director of Casa Pueblo, and a professor at the University of Puerto Rico, said the government hadn't reached the communities who needed the most help, and it's possible that it never will. He said, quote, "The power authority already stated that for some communities, they are not going to rebuild the systems at all. So isolated communities are more at risk of being left behind. There's a lot of suffering, so we need to engage actively right away. And that's what we have been doing, but we're going to have to do it from the bottom up." Unquote. Also helping in Puerto Rico is renowned chef Jose Andres, who, with his nonprofit, World Central Kitchen, served its 3 millionth meal on the island. The nonprofit has done more to feed the people in the aftermath of the hurricane than any other organization, especially FEMA. To reach this major milestone, the chef and his hashtag Chefs for Puerto Rico network and volunteers served hot meals and sandwiches in Puerto Rico's 78 municipalities by mobilizing food trucks and setting up 20 kitchens across the island. Which is great. Too bad we don't have anyone with the business know-how and concern for the people like this in Puerto Rico's, or in our government for that matter. Besides the Whitefish Energy debacle that the FBI is investigating, a House committee is looking into a second no-bid energy contract, PREPA, awarded in Puerto Rico. A $200 million deal with Cobra Energy. That deal includes a similar clause that Whitefish Energy had prohibiting a government audit and waives liability if work is delayed. Why is that possible? Puerto Rico's inept Trump-loving governor, Ricardo Rossello, is asking various federal agencies for $94 billion in grants. With this much public money on the line, monitoring how U.S. tax dollars are spent in the recovery will be crucial to prevent waste, fraud, and shoddy work. The best way to do that is by awarding contracts through the open bidding process, which allows the largest number of businesses a chance to compete to offer the best deal. According to Vox, these types of contracts generally require more scrutiny and oversight than no-bid deals. So far, competitive bidding hasn't exactly been a top priority for federal agencies. Half of the 540 federal contracts signed so far as of November 16th, totaling $252 million, were awarded outside the open bidding process. This is disaster capitalism in action, folks. One major problem with the no-bid contracts is they get less scrutiny and oversight, for example. And this is so far beyond me. Simplified acquisitions, which involve contracts below $750,000 in disaster zones, don't require a clause allowing the government to audit cost and review records to evaluate the company's performance. They don't require contractors to report potential kickback schemes, and they don't have to meet certain labor and safety standards. And, according to Bloomberg, FEMA is relying more and more on no-bid contracts to respond to disasters. In the past, no-bid contracts awarded for urgency reasons were reserved for federal agencies working on military missions. But last year, the Obama administration expanded the types of contracts that could fall into this category to include federal disaster zones. FEMA now more and more relies on no-bid contracts to respond to disasters. The agency awarded $200 million in single-source contracts in the fiscal year that ended September 30th, the most since 2008. Vox's review of procurement records shows that in response to Hurricane Maria alone, FEMA has awarded $61 million in single-source contracts, no big deals in which the agencies only reached out to one business to make the deal. One business!
I thought America was all about competition.
Meanwhile, the Puerto Rican people are suffering. As my friend put it, tired and losing hope more and more. I'm going to end on a bright note. Just kidding. I don't really have one today. First, I want to remind everyone that we only have till mid-December to save net neutrality. So call your senator. Tell them to save net neutrality.
They're the only ones who can. It needs to happen.
Second, I'm going to end with a very, very important call to action that has been a while in coming.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
Oppose overriding state restrictions on concealed carry. The vote could be on Wednesday. The House Judiciary Committee will debate and vote on H.R. 30 this Wednesday, November 30th. If it passes to committee, it will move to a full floor vote. Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, and his fellow Republicans have proposed the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act of 2017. To review, it is a pair of bills introduced to the House and the Senate. These bills would require that citizens who are allowed to carry concealed weapons in their home states be allowed to carry their weapons in every other state. Under this legislation, residents of states that do not require concealed carry permits could travel to any other state and carry their concealed weapon without any permit. Law enforcement organizations, including Law Enforcement Coalition for Common Sense, have opposed concealed carry reciprocity, noting that it would make it nearly impossible for police to confirm if a person with a concealed weapon is carrying the weapon legally. Additionally, Senator Cornyn's law would allow gun owners to sue police for even attempting to verify the status of their permits according to the Trace and Everytown for Gun Safety. 39 states require gun safety training for any concealed carry permit applicant, and at least 30 ban convicted domestic abusers from having gun permits, and 28 states bar federal stalkers from having permits. It should be every state, but since it's not. Under the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, these popular common sense gun control measures would be invalidated. Permitless concealed carry would become legal in every state. Republicans claim to respect state-level legislation, yet this here is a blatant attempt to use federal law to contravene states' gun control measures. So you're going to call the House Judiciary Committee at 202-225-3951 before Wednesday. So if you're listening to this on Tuesday, now's your chance. Or Wednesday morning, whenever you can. We are calling this office because this organization is driving legislation related to the issue. Again, the number is 202-225-3951. 202-225-3951. All right. Thank you for listening. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, that's your ABDIVING.com under the K-Voice tab, or download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get your podcast. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice, and of course on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. If you like to filter your news through some laughs and some angry yelling progressive liberals, listen to Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick Vile on their podcast, Crab Diving, 5 days a week on the Crab Diving Network. All right. Take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist!
The American dream is dead.
Resist!
Elections matter. Voting matters. You can't take anything for granted. You can't sit this one out. It's up to you.
This is what Trump is like.
It's up to you.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
If we, the millions of Americans who believe in economy, decency, in a greater good, in justice for all, if we fall into the trap of separating ourselves by our causes and our labels, then we will weaken our fight and we will lose.